Today, I want to give you a broad general overview of the process of buying a dental practice. My name is Chris. I'm a dentist. I've been a practice owner myself, and I now help dentists buy dental practices. So the first thing you need to do if you want to buy a dental practice is you need to save up an emergency fund. Now, this is something you should be doing anyways, regardless of whether you're buying a dental practice or not, because if you lose your job or something happens, you want to have some money saved up that would cover your life expenses if something happened. But specifically when you're buying a practice, the banks are going to actually require you to have some liquidity, which simply just means some money saved up in your bank account that isn't invested into something that you can't access. So this is not money that's in a retirement account. That does not count. We're talking about money that's in a savings account or in a checkings account. Now, the reason banks want to see that you have some money is simple. First off, they want to make sure that if something happens and your practice isn't profitable for a few months, that you're not going to go out of business and default on your loan, because they want to make sure they're going to get their money paid back to them. And the second thing is they also use it as kind of like a way to judge how responsible you are with your finances. Short end of the story is you need to have something like 5 to 10% of the purchase price for a practice saved up in a bank account before they're going to give you a loan to buy that practice. Also, don't pay anything extra towards your student loans. You can put your student loans on income-based repayment, pay the minimum payments possible before you become an owner so that you're saving up as much as possible. Once you're an owner, making $500,000 a year, it's gonna be easy to pay back those student loans. Don't try to pay them back your first year out of school. Every dollar you save up when you're working as an associate is one extra dollar that you're gonna be able to use to buy back your freedom, to buy your way into ownership so that you can then be making significantly more. Then it's gonna be significantly easier and more responsible to pay back your student loans at that point. All right, so the second step, you've saved up your emergency fund. Now you gotta find a practice to buy. And this can actually be a pretty difficult process. When you buy a house, you just go to Zillow and you can look at all the practices on the market. You can call any realtor on the market and say, hey, I wanna buy the house. They'll show you anything on the market because there's a system with realtors where they have a commission for the buyer's rep and the seller's rep. And usually it's something like 6%. Half goes to the buyer's rep, half goes to the seller's rep. That's 3% goes to each. When you buy a dental practice, there is no Zillow for dental practices. Now, I have probably 5 or 6 different people that I'm speaking with right now that are trying to develop the Zillow of dental practices. I think it's a very different market than houses, and there's a lot of difficulties here. Maybe someone will figure it out. There are multiple sites out there that will put practices on. But typically what I find is by the time a practice gets on one of those websites, it's probably not a very good practice. The best practices usually sell long before they have any chance of making it to some sort of website. But the big thing that is significantly different from the real estate market with houses and with dental practices is while realtors get to split between a buyer's rep and a seller's rep, that 6% commission, with dental practices, the commission is actually tends to be closer to 10%, which is wild. We're talking $1 million practice, 10% commission, that's $100,000 for that broker making one sale. That is insane. That's a lot of money for one sale. But the big difference is there is no buyer and seller rep splitting in dental practices. The only person who gets paid is that seller's representative. And so we're talking this practice broker, the seller's representative, has an enormous incentive to sell this practice for as much as possible. And because there's no system for splitting between buyer and seller's reps, where a realtor will show you any house on the market, a dental practice broker is only going to show you the practices that they personally have listed for sale. They don't want you to know about anything else in the market. They would prefer you work with just them and only look at their practices. Because if you buy from someone else, they're not going to get that $100,000 commission for selling you that $1 million dental practice. So how do you find the practices for sale? Well, you have to reach out to every single practice broker that is selling practices in your area. There's no shortcut. There is no website you can go to. There's no one person, no one number you can call. You have to reach out individually to each and every practice broker. Take an afternoon to find as many practice brokers as you can. Call them all, reach out to all of them, because they are all gonna have different practices listed for sale. Now, you need to plan on this taking at least 4 to 6 months, sometimes up to a year to find the right practice. And it's worth it. If you buy the right practice, it could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. But if you buy the wrong practice, it could be one of the worst decisions you've ever made. A practice broker is gonna have dentists reach out to them, and the dentists are gonna say, hey, can you sell my practice for me? And the practice broker is going to say, well, let me think about it, $100,000 income. Yeah, I'll sell your practice for you. And so the practice brokers have multiple practices listed for sale. Now, some of them are going to sell quickly, right away, like within a week. The good practices. The good practices are going to sell right away. But there's some bad practices out there. I have a database of over 500 practices that I've helped clients evaluate. I only recommended my clients buy about 20% of those practices. That means about 80% of the practices that we evaluated, I decided, don't buy that. It's not worth it. So understand, a practice broker is going to have five dentists that reach out to them. Only one of the practices is worth selling. The other four are not. So when you first reach out to brokers, they're going to have a whole list of practices that they have not been able to sell. And so you come along as a new buyer, they're going to think, oh, maybe this dentist is gullible enough to buy this practice no one else has wanted. And so before they even show you the good practices, they're typically going to show you some of these duds that no one else has wanted. And so the first few practices you look at are probably not going to be that good. Just being honest with you, I've seen some really, really poor offices. They're going to say, oh, hey, I got this office for you. Brand new equipment. Oh my goodness, brand new equipment. Wow, look at these brand new ADEC chairs. Brand new. The problem is, the reason that there's brand new chairs is because some dentist tried to do a startup there. They failed and then they went out of business. And you're going to go in and buy this office. Really, all you're buying is equipment that has no patients. That is just a absolute waste of your time. Don't even consider that. Why would you buy an office that has no patients? The whole reason you're buying a dental practice is because you want to have patients to see. How do you make money as a dentist? Your treatment plan. Who do you treatment plan on? Dental chairs? You're going to do a filling? You're going to do a crown on an ADEC chair? No, on patients. You're buying a dental practice because you need patients. So you're going to see all these practices where the dentist, they got a new office across town. And this was their old office, but it's still a really nice office. You want it? I mean, come on, practice broker. Show me the real practices. So after you weed through those initial terrible practices, you might start getting some decent practices sent to you. You need to make sure you continually reach out to these brokers because the good practices, they can sell really, really, really fast. And sometimes there'll be multiple buyers making offers on the good practices. You might have a practice that is going to sell within a week after being listed, and there are five or six people making offers on it. Some markets are very competitive, and there's multiple offers, so you have to be ready. Once the broker sends you that practice, you need to have someone that you're working with that can help you evaluate those numbers so that you can move quickly. You need to be able to, within 2 to 3 days of receiving the packet of information, make a decision on if you want to submit a letter of intent or not. Because if you wait on those good practices, it's going to be gone. Now, once you have reached out to brokers and they send you practices, they are going to send you an email or some sort of web portal link, maybe a Dropbox, that's going to have a bunch of documents. And if you've never done this before, it can be really confusing because they will send you a ton of documents, so many documents. How do you know if a practice is worth buying by just looking at a bunch of documents? I mean, the truth is, you can't always. Sometimes you can learn a lot about, but sometimes you can't. The brokers are pretty smart in how they do things. They've been doing this for a while. They have their strategies and they have their systems in place where they can make an office look very appealing, even if it's not. And this is one of the biggest hurdles that you have to come over as a buyer. You have to figure out, how are you going to evaluate these opportunities, even though the practice broker is insanely motivated to get you to buy a practice, even if it's not the right fit for you, because they are incentivized sometimes by up to $100,000 or more to have you buy this practice, regardless of if it's going to be the right practice for you as the buyer. Now, I'm going to put in the link, the description, I'm going to put a link to the practice evaluation checklist. It's a free download I have on my website that goes through some of the initial things that you can look at when you first receive these documents from practice brokers. Once you get a little further along in the process, you can find my contact information there in the description as well. I would be happy to look at a practice with you. That's what I do full time, is I help dentists look at practices to determine if they're worth buying. Last year, I looked at over 500 dental practices. This is literally, I'm doing 2, 3, 4, sometimes up to 5 or 6 a day. I do this full time. I look at practices all over the country. It's given me a very unique perspective that I don't know if anyone else has, because I see so many practices. I see so many markets based both on what I've seen and based on comparing this practice to the database that I have built up. If this is your first time buying a practice, if you're about to spend $1 million on something, you need to make sure you're buying the right thing. Remember, the seller is paying a practice broker $100,000. Some of these practice brokers have been working as practice brokers for 15, 20 years. They have so much more experience than you have. And you think you're going to go in by yourself and you're going to be smarter than them, you just got to be very careful because, like I said, about one out of every five practices on the market are worth buying. And the first practices brokers are going to show you are going to be the ones no one else has wanted to buy. So once you have finally found a practice that you want to buy, the next step is going to be negotiating the purchase price on this practice. Now, I want you to understand, when you are buying a dental practice, there is no set standard on how much a dental practice is worth or how much you should pay for a practice. Now, brokers are going to want to make you believe that they have done some sort of valuation to determine, is this practice worth this amount of money? This practice, revenue was $1 million and all these expenses, and they had these fancy charts, and then they multiply it by the multiple. It's just like this number. They just make up a number. They call it a multiple. They say, oh, this practice sold it at 2x EBITDA. This one sold it 8x EBITDA. EBITDA, fancy word for profit. Now, if you're buying some sort of large corporation, if you're buying Apple or Netflix or Google, maybe EBITDA is different from profit and you need to care about amortization, et cetera. But they're just using this word because it makes them feel like they're fancier. That's really all they're doing. All they do is they're just looking at either profit or they're looking at revenue. Those are the two numbers they look at. And then they're going to multiply it by some sort of made up multiple. And I've seen some practices in the same city. One will use a times 2 multiple. Some will use a times 4.5 multiple. Some will use a times 0.5 multiple. The multiples are just all over the place. They're just made up. What the practice brokers are actually doing is they are saying, how much do I think I could sell this practice for? And then I'm going to add a little bit on just in case someone's gullible enough to overpay, because obviously I want to get more commission. And then I'm going to make sure that they're going to be able to get a loan from the bank. And then if the number is in a reasonable spot, then yeah, that's what I'll list it as. And then I'm going to go back and I'm going to make up whatever numbers I need to make it look like the practice is actually worth that. It's all a charade. It's all made up. It's all literally some practice broker sitting on Google Sheets or Excel and just typing in some numbers until it looks the way they want it to look. That's all they're doing. There's no like huge practice broker evaluation training program that you go through in order to become a certified dental practice analyst. There's no such thing as a certified dental practice analyst certificate, master's degree, PhD. Doesn't exist. Just making up numbers in Excel documents. That's all they do. Banks typically will only loan up to 100% of previous year's revenue. Someone at Bank of America 20 years ago decided that. They said, well, we got to put some sort of cap on this. Let's just say 100% of previous year's revenue. Yeah, sounds good, Bob. That's all they did. They just made that up. So now that is when you buy a dental practice, practice brokers know this. I've talked to all the different banks that loan to dental practices, and they all say, oh, we had this guy from Bank of America come to our bank and bestow upon us the wisdom of how we determine if we should give practice loans out to buyers. And based on their wisdom, we have this complex mechanism by which we value dental practices. They look at last year's revenue and they say, we're not going to loan over 100% of previous year's revenue. It's all they do. Literally all they do. Very, very simple. And dental practice brokers, they can be smart sometimes. Sometimes they're not smart at all. But they do know that 100% number. And so what they do is they just look at the practice and they say, okay, last year's revenue was $800,000. How can we make this practice look as valuable as possible so that we can get as close as possible to that 800 number? That's what they're doing. They want to get as much as possible for the practice because they're going to get their commission. So you as a buyer, you need to come in and you need to look at this practice and say, hey, am I going to be able to afford to pay back that practice loan? That's all that matters for you is affordability. What really matters to you is if you buy this practice, are you going to be making a lot of money? Are you going to be happy? Are you going to enjoy being at this office? And are you going to be profitable? Those are the things that matter. And so what I do with my clients is I put together a report based upon what the practice is likely going to do for them as the buyer, not what it did for the seller, not what it does on some magical sheet for some practice. I'm looking at how many active patients there are. Have these patients been over or under treatment planned on in the past? What kind of potential is there for you as a buyer? And then based upon that, we'll come up with a projected revenue and a projected income number. And then we'll determine, is the amount that this practice broker is asking, is it in line with what you are likely going to be making at this office. And then I try to keep practice loan repayments under 10, max 12% of your projected revenue at this office. Not what the seller's revenue was, but what your projected revenue is. Because you don't want to have to be paying 50% of your income towards a practice loan repayment. Or else, what was the point of even buying a practice? Now, if we run the numbers and you're going to be profitable, well, then great. Now, sometimes even though you're going to be profitable, I still recommend negotiating because the practice brokers, they're inflating that number to try to see what they can get. Now, you as a buyer, your job is to come in and see how little can you pay, because why not? Why would you pay more when you could pay less? So, of course, you should be negotiating. And there's a lot of tact involved here. You got to be careful because if you're buying a practice in, you know, Salt Lake City, Utah, or Dallas, Texas, or Los Angeles, you're probably going to have a lot less negotiating power than if you're buying a practice in rural Kansas. If you are buying a practice that's been on the market for 5 or 6 months, for a year, for 2 years, you're going to have a ton of negotiating power. But if you are looking at a practice that just came to market last week, you got to be careful, because if there are five other buyers making offers on this practice, which is not uncommon, I have helped multiple buyers buy practices where they were in a bidding war against other buyers. I've actually had situations where I've had clients, two of my clients were bidding on the same practice. Actually, it happens quite a bit because I work with so many different buyers that it's just inevitable that this is going to happen. And so you need to be careful because, yeah, there's a lot of practices that are for sale, but only a certain amount of those practices are actually worth pursuing, are actually worth buying. And there are more and more buyers now than ever that are looking to buy practices. I recently saw an article online. It's from some practice broker group. So once again, you got to take everything they say with a grain of salt. But they were saying they think that 2026 is probably on track to be one of the highest number of transitions that have happened in any year in history, which is pretty crazy to think about, because the baby boomer generation, they're at the peak of retirement right now. Now is the time to find a practice, because there are a lot of practices for sale right now. And no one knows if in 10, 15 years, it's going to be the same. Even in 2 or 3 years, we don't know what's going to happen. But right now, there are so many opportunities. I recommend if you want to be a practice owner, now's the time to do it. The next step is due diligence. Once you have made an offer on a practice, you are going to submit a letter of intent. You're going to have your lawyer help you put this letter together. That's where you make the official offer, the letter of intent. Once that has been accepted by the seller, you then need to enter due diligence or verification. I actually oftentimes like to call it verification. Due diligence sounds like some fancy legal term. It's really just verification. You're just going and you're verifying the documents that the seller sent you, the practice broker sent you, that they're actually accurate, that they're actually true. You want to make sure that when you go into the office, things look the way they should look for an office that's supposedly producing $1 million a year. If you have documents that say, oh, this practice is $1 million practice, you go in and there's only 3 patients on the hygiene schedule on Monday, you should be questioning something. How are you producing $1 million and there's only 3 patients on your schedule? I mean, that should be a huge red flag right there. If on the other hand, you go in and there are 50 patients on the schedule, well, then that is like, that's incredible. That means there's probably a lot of growth opportunity. I have a whole list of things that I go through clients with during due diligence, very comprehensive. And obviously I cannot cover all of that in this video, but basically you need to make sure that this office you're buying is going to actually help you reach your goals. Because if you buy the wrong practice, it can be a huge headache. But if you buy the right practice and you actually go through and do the due diligence, do the verification to make sure that it's the right practice, this is one of the safest and best investments you could possibly make. So once you've completed your due diligence, you have that offer in, you've already negotiated the price down. Now you need to make sure that you're going to get a loan for this practice. We already talked about you need to make sure you have an emergency fund saved up. That's important. But you also want to make sure that you're reaching out to multiple different banks. Don't just reach out to one bank and take what they give you, because you have a lot of negotiating power as a buyer. You are incredibly useful to banks. If you go to one of the dental specific lenders, one of the larger national banks, they're oftentimes going to give you that loan pretty much at cost to them. They do that though because they want to have that relationship with you for banking and for payment processing and for other services in the future. And they know that if you are locked into paying back a practice loan with them for 10 to 15 years, you're going to be locked into using them as your banker for the next 10 to 15 years. So with that being said, you need to reach out to multiple different banks and you need to compare options, and then you have negotiating power. the number the bank is going to give you is probably higher than what they're able to do. They're first going to say, hey, we'll give you 6% loan on a 10-year. And another bank might say, we'll give you 5.5. And another bank says, well, maybe we'll give you 5. And then you go to another bank and you say, hey, these banks offer me this. And then you can say, oh, well, we'll do 4.5. You're now 1.5% lower than where you started. And when you're taking out a loan for $1 million plus, 1.5%, that could be more than $100,000. That could be an enormous amount of money that you're saving just by taking the time to do a little bit of negotiating with the banks. So apply at multiple banks, do your best, figure out how you can get the best possible rates, the best possible terms. Also, not all terms are created equal. I have seen some banks give some absolutely ridiculous terms. Things like, oh, repayment penalties. You're going to have to pay back this huge amount of money if you pay back early. All sorts of tricks that these banks will use. You got to be very careful. Make sure that you have someone who understands dental practice transitions and understands how this loan process works. That's something I help my clients with. A big part of my service is we're evaluating the offers from the banks and we're comparing, because not all offers are created equal from banks. Absolutely not. There are some absolutely terrible loans and there are some absolutely incredible loans. And if you do this right, you can get one of these incredible loans. Type of financing that basically no other industry is going to give you, because dental practices are such low risk compared to other businesses. If you go to just some random bank, some local bank, credit union, something like that, they're going to put you into a bucket of, oh, this guy owns a business. Oh, so we're going to give him a business loan. Understand, when you're being grouped in with businesses, you're being grouped in with restaurants, you're being grouped in with construction companies, you're being grouped in with some sort of cat groomer business. But when you buy a dental practice, you are so much lower risk than basically any other business. You don't want to be grouped in with the cat groomers. You want to find a bank where you're going to be just grouped with other dentists, because your risk profile is so much lower. Your rates are going to be so much better. Now, of course, there are literally hundreds of other things you have to do before you buy a dental practice. I'm not saying that it's a simple process. It's honestly a little bit complicated. There is a lot of work that has to be done. I do have a closing step list that I give to all my clients that goes through all the steps that need to take place before closing. We're talking things like insurance credentialing. We're talking about things like signing up for your general and business liability insurances. There's a lot of stuff you have to do when you buy a dental practice. It's probably gonna take you something like 2 to 3 months to close on a dental practice once you've submitted that letter of intent. Sometimes a little bit longer, that's typical. You need to plan on leaving your associate job a few weeks before you actually purchase the office. I do not recommend you leave your job on the same day you buy the office, because there's a lot of steps that you're going to need to do before you actually take over the office. Things that you're not even thinking about, like setting up the website, switching over utilities, setting up new phones, setting up payment processors. There's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to become an owner. I am not going to sugarcoat it. It's a lot of work to become a dental practice owner. If you're lazy, maybe you shouldn't do this. But if you're hardworking and you want to double or triple your income, then it's absolutely worth it. It's going to be some work. It's not going to be easy. There's going to be some upfront cost involved here. But typically what I find is the first 3 to 6 months are going to be the most stressful. That's when you have the highest number of things that you're getting used to, the highest number of changes. But once you get a year, 2, 3 years in, you're going to look back and you're going to say, I can't believe I ever worked as an associate. I mean, I did not know that many owners that to say, I just want to go back to be an associate. Because once you are an owner and once you've got your practice set up and things running and you're making 2 to 3 times, why would you ever go back to an associate job where you lose control, where you have to do what other people tell you to do, where you have a boss and you're making less? Why would you do that? But there's a lot of associates that become owners. Not that many owners become associates. Once you have been an owner, you're going to realize there's no going back. It's so much better. Really, as a dentist, to be honest, the only reason I became a dentist was because of ownership. I knew I wanted to own a business, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I had a friend who owned a dental practice, and he was like making a lot of money. And I was like, well, that's probably a smart decision. I mean, you can literally be your own boss as a dentist. That's the advantage of being a dentist. That is what sets dentistry apart from other fields. The reality is most people who start businesses are not successful, and it takes them 5, 6, 7, sometimes 10 tries. And I mean, if you have a lot of money and you have years and years to do trial and error to find a business that works, if you want to own a restaurant, for instance, like something like 50% of restaurants fail in the first year, I think, maybe you'll eventually make it work, but chances are you're going to fail. As a dental practice owner, the rates of failure are almost zero. Dentistry is unique because it's one of the very few careers where you basically have a guaranteed option to be an owner and to be successful. You just have to make sure that you're doing it correctly. Now, the one thing you need to be careful about if you buy a dental practice, I'm not worried about you going out of business. The big risk is if you buy a practice where you don't have enough patients and you're not busy enough, then you might get trapped into a spot where you're making enough to pay your bills and you're making a little bit of money, but you're not making a lot of. And so if you're going to become an owner, you're going to be working anyways, why not buy a practice where you're going to be busy and making a lot of money? If you get into one of these situations, I call it the death spiral. Obviously, that's a little dramatic, but it's I like saying that. So the death spiral, where you buy a practice, it doesn't have enough patients, so you're not making enough money. There's part one. Part two is you need more patients, but you don't have enough money to spend on marketing. And so you can't get more patients. And now you don't have enough patients to not make enough money. And now you don't have enough money to where you can't spend on marketing. It's this death spiral. And why not just sidestep that spiral altogether to where you don't even need marketing? If you buy the right practice, if you buy a practice that already has 2,000 to 3,000 active patients, then you're never gonna have to do marketing again if you run that office properly. You already have enough patients. The only reason you have to do marketing at a dental office is if you don't have enough patients. But if you buy an office that already has enough patients, you just need to get enough patients to replace the patients that are leaving. And oftentimes, if you have a big enough practice and you're treating those patients well, just through referrals alone, you're gonna have enough new patients coming in to replace attrition. So let's completely bi-step that spiral, the death spiral altogether, and just start out by buying a successful practice. How do you determine if a practice is worth buying? You need to make sure that it has enough patients, and you need to make sure that you are going to be able to be profitable there. If you buy a practice where the seller has over-treatment planned on patients in the past, you're gonna come in and all of the work is going to have already been completed on those patients. So be very careful if you have an accountant or a CPA, a practice broker, for instance. They tell you, yeah, this practice generated $1 million last year in revenue, and profit was $500,000, 50% overhead. This is a very profitable practice. You should buy it. Problem is, sometimes the way that they generated that $1 million is by doing way too many crowns on patients. This is one of the biggest things I see is over-treatment planning on crowns. You come in, you meet Miss Jones. Miss Jones, nice to meet you. Time for your exam. Miss Jones has 10 brand new zirconia crowns that were just done last year. That's how the dentist made his $1 million of revenue, is because he was over treatment planning crowns on patients. So not only are you gonna come in and you probably don't wanna be as aggressive as the seller was in treatment planning, but a lot of the work that would have been a filling for you to do, would have been a crown for you to do, it's already been done, crowned over by the previous seller's aggressive treatment planning. So you come in and there's no work left for you to do. And so what was a $1 million practice for that seller is now only a $500,000 practice for you. But remember, expenses are $500,000. So now we have $500,000 in revenue, $500,000 in expenses, $0 of income for you. This is the risk. This is the problem. This is the thing you need to look out for. You need to find a practice where you're going to come in and it's an immediate growth opportunity for you. If you see a practice that's small and a practice broker tells you, well, this is a great growth opportunity, it's only a growth opportunity if there's patients there. If there are very few patients, it's not a growth opportunity. That is a burden. That is a death spiral waiting to happen. You are going to have to go in and you're going to have to do marketing to get new patients in. That's not a growth opportunity. That's buying an obligation. On the other hand, if you can find a practice where the seller is slowing down, getting older, treatment planning is dropping, you come in. You can now grow the practice through being a dentist. You can grow the practice through just doing treatment planning. The other day, I was at an office. We went in and we looked at the x-ray. The dentist was doing a filling on a tooth, but there were 10 other teeth in that mouth that could have been crowns. This is not being overly dramatic. This dentist was literally doing the bare minimum. You could have gone in and just done a few crowns and a few fillings, like not even trying that hard, and double production in the first year that you are an owner there. If you go in and also add implants, you also add Invisalign, you also work a little bit harder, you try to treatment plan some perio, etc., You might triple the size of that practice in the first year. That's a growth opportunity. A practice where there are two or three hygienists that have full schedules, but the dentist is old, slowing down, and not comprehensively treatment planning on those patients. Incredible growth opportunity. On the other hand, you find a practice where there's no hygienist. The dentist is just is doing his own cleanings. Not a growth opportunity. That's an obligation. Be careful. If you are interested in buying a practice and you are looking for someone to help you, you can find my contact information in the description below. Reach out. I would be happy to help you evaluate dental practices and work with you through the process up until closing. That's what I do. I do this full time. I worked with over 50 buyers last year that went through my entire service and another few hundred that I worked with them in partial ways. Reach out. I would be happy to work with you. If you don't want to work with me, that's fine, but you can still check out the free practice evaluation checklist. I have that down in the description. Free download, no obligation. Check it out. Honestly, I'm trying to help you guys out as much as I can. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. My email's down there as well. Good luck, and I hope you're able to find the right practice.